Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. A few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Dr. Mark Sherwood, welcome to the show.
Eric, it's good to see you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. And I know we had a brief conversation before we recorded, and I'm super excited to talk about healthcare, not just healthcare, but that and its impact on the emotions and the emotional health of patients that you take care of, and then in general for our audience, for them to learn more about how those two work together. So I'm going to jump right in, and I'm hoping I'm going to be able to keep us to an hour. But Mark, if we get past that, I'm just going to say, come back for part two. I hope you'll do that. Yes. And also, I'd like your wife to join us too. So, because I know you're in practice together.
She's an upgrade, man. She's prettier and smarter than I am. So you guys will enjoy her even too.
Well played. Well played. All right. So when we think about the patients slash families that you see, what are some of the common concerns that you encounter, whether it's relating to a serious health condition or not? What are some common things that you see here in the most recent?
Well, probably I think people need to know, Eric, that our health in this country today is the most unhealthy it's been in the history of mankind's existence. It is that bad. The greatest dilemma I see today facing us is how to navigate this dreaded consequence of the standard American Western diet environment. It is that bad. And I'm seeing now things like insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes that used to be occurring when we would lose our endocrine communication abilities later in life, talking about 50 or 60 years ago.
Right.
People in their 80s or so. But now you're seeing this work downwards to people that are in their upper teens, not to mention the obesity crisis. And it is creating quite a strain and a stress, not just on our system, but on families' lives to be able to do what they want, when they want, how they want, for as long as they want, because we're seeing an increase in this thing called six span.
So, Mark, I'm curious. Because when I think about emotional intelligence, which is the place in which we play, it's all about the impact on our choices. So how much of this is lifestyle versus sort of, oh my gosh, you've got an autoimmune disease, no one saw it coming? How much of it is lifestyle, meaning managed by our choices in life, if you will?
My opinion, I would say it's in the mid 90 percentile range. And it sounds like a strong statement, but I really believe this because you can go back and correlate in history when we started getting all this autoimmune diseases, obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, going on and on. Really sort of, you know, not to mention autism, it really started to blossom or bloom in this exacerbation of a trend starting back in the early 80s at the intersection of two things that happened. You had this induction of the food pyramid. You know, the government started getting involved in. What they thought was best for our food supply, and that created a lot of lobbying and subsidies and things and poor foods and education around that. And then you had the same thing with the vaccine liabilities got transferred to the government and away from the vaccine companies. And so you saw this schedule go up and from five vaccines in a year or two to 20 or something like that. So that was kind of the beginning of the trends that led us to where we are today. And you mentioned emotional things. When people are not functional or not at peace inside, I'm talking about physically speaking. I had, you know, these dilemmas or these inflammatory conditions we just described.
Yeah.
Emotionally speaking, they're going to struggle because you don't feel well. And I think people use the word feeling to be defined in a physical symptom. But make no mistake, you can't separate the physical and emotional. It's the same thing. And if you don't feel well, it doesn't make you happy.
Well, what's interesting about that, too, at least from my own experience, is the connection to food and our relationship with it. And yes. I know food is not the entirety of the equation, but the idea that, you know what, I'm going to just, wow, that's one chip, but now I'm eating four, and wow, I could eat the whole bag type of thing. Is that part of your equation too?
100%. And a lot of people don't know the whys behind that. So right. I'm going to share some things right now. People are going to go, what? So remember that studies have been done to show that sugar can drive dopamine as effective or more effective than cocaine, right? So you're talking about a very addictive drug-like substance. I'm talking just processed sugars. But then you think about, well, what else is there? What about those chips? What about those breads? Why do they call those comfort foods? Well, it's because the chemicals in those things through gliadin, gluten, and even some of the proteins within the dairies, they convert to these exorphins. And people can look this up, exorphins, in our gut. And these things, Eric, bind to our opioid receptors. So when you take something that has sugar chemicals and these bread and grain chemicals, and you put that together, it's almost like ingesting cocaine, perhaps a cross between heroin and fentanyl, and having it at your disposal wherever you go. You go to the restaurant and they give it to you for free. And so it's really a problem, and it becomes not just a thing that we just don't have enough willpower. You know,
well, you know, that's interesting, Mark. What you just said there about willpower, and I'll confess my guilt to sometimes, and my wife is who enlightened me here. I would think like, or I would make this statement like, well, they just need to have willpower to stop. And you then can't. She goes, well, that's what she says to me, right? She says, Eric, this stuff is, it's blocking their willpower.
It is a drug. And our government, I love my country. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this to be disparaging.
Yeah.
But the subsidization of the foods that make us sick and addicted is like a drug dealer. That's exactly what it is, because it gets you stuck in the system and it will take everything you've got, just like drugs do. It'll take your life away. It'll take your finances away. It'll take your freedom away.
And I'm going to sort of connect that to what my wife was telling me in this. She said that's maybe one of the reasons why the food companies are not happy about the GLP-1s, because 100%. It has the ability of sort of neutralizing some of that effect. Is that ring true for you?
Yes. Now, we have used a lot of the GLP-1 agonists, such as a compound of semaglutide, tirzepatide, retatrutide, all those things we've used. And now we don't use them, I will qualify this, with trying to lose weight.
Right.
Although people do lose fat tissue, but we teach them to change body composition and teach them to use these things like maybe training wheels and a bike to learn how to really get lifestyle right again, learn how to ride the bike of life.
Yes.
Having said that, we have had terrific success with those, with microdosing on an individualized, personalized note. I've used them myself. We've actually used those things with experimentation towards more longevity mechanisms.
Right.
And in this kind of concept, we use them to create more ease of perhaps in engineering a 24-hour fast that you might do like every, you know, 3 to 4 weeks or something like that, right? So there's things you can do that are out there, and I think those things are a blessing if used correctly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Mark, it's probably not lost on you. I could probably just do a show on this. But for our audience who tunes in for a lot of a variety of things, but certainly from an emotional standpoint. So
yeah.
as a physician, and certainly feel free to use Michelle in your answer as well. How important is trust and empathy when you are meeting maybe a patient for the first time?
My wife and I, we have several statements that we make. Mm-hmm. And I've learned this over time, Eric, and this is the dysfunction of the system that's out there right now that predominantly takes over healthcare. Mm-hmm. There's not a relationship. We know that good things happen in a trustworthy relationship. Mm-hmm. So we're going to create that. When we work with people, it's a partnership, man. It's not a dictatorship. And when we work with people, they get better. And they get better because I realize from an anatomical position mm-hmm. that I'm graciously given two ears and one mouth, meaning that I listen twice as much as I speak.
Yeah.
Hear their story. And the questions that I go with, and this really helps people frame it right, because it is not, I don't want them giving verbal diarrhea on what's wrong with them. I'm not looking at that. But I want to coach them, guide them into areas that they talk about themselves, the things that are going good. And we create that story first. Like, well, before we get into what's going not so well with you, and I use the words carefully, mm-hmm. I want to hear about what makes you happy. Tell me about your spouse. Tell me about your grandkids. Tell me about your kids. Tell me about your dogs. Tell me about your house. Tell me about your hobbies. And I want them to go through that. I'm talking 15, 20, 30 minutes. And I want to build up some momentum about what's good. And they're like, they care. And then we take notes. And you know what I talk about the next time I see them? I don't talk about first question, how you feeling? I talk about how's your dog, Spot? How's your husband, Fred? Hey, how's that aunt of yours? How's her condition? You know, and if you go there, they see that you care. And the old saying goes, and it's true, people don't care what you know until they know you care.
Yeah. Interesting enough, my own experience in the more, because I don't consider the traditional healthcare system. Maybe that's a good way for me to put it. Right. And I had a condition that was diagnosed during the pandemic, in the early part of the pandemic. So that would have been February, March of 20.
Yes.
And it was a pretty serious diagnosis, Mark. And it was almost like I felt like I was in the grocery line. Right. So you're in line with your 20 things and somebody's in front of you with 25 things. They finish up their bag. They move on. You get to the register. The person rings you up and says, here's the total. And this is all like a whirlwind to me. I had gone through testing. I mean, all these different things. And it was pretty much, this is what it is. This is why it's going to happen. And this is what we need to do next. And now have a nice day. Wow. And I, it was like, well, hold on. I'm trying to get my mind around what you just told me, what you just diagnosed me with. And you're basically just telling me, okay, we're done here. You've got to move on. You mentioned spending 15, 20, 30 minutes, I think more like 20, 30 minutes, just to kind of get a sense of who they are.
Yes.
How is it that you're able to do that? But my example is not just one. I have other situations where it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, go. 1, 2, 3, you got to have. So what's going on there?
Well, a lot of people don't know this, and I have experience with this, and my wife, Dr. Michelle, would know this as well. Now, my wife was kicked out of mainstream medicine. She's a double board certified, top of her class, osteopathic physician, very smart.
Yeah.
But she was kicked out of medicine because she was spending too much time with people and they weren't coming back for return visits. And therein lies a dilemma. And this is back in about 2010, so to speak, something like that.
Yeah.
Right. And so what happened was, and people need to know this, I cut the physicians a little bit of break here. But what happens is they are driven by a system that collects money via collection on people filing claims with people's insurance companies. Right. So they have a certain value that's applied to X patient, Mark or Eric of the world or Michelle.
Yep.
And that value must be applied to expenses. And remember, healthcare today does not care about your health as much as they care about the profitability of the system. It's not a nonprofit. It's not for your health. It's for profit. Any for-profit business, it is not good business to waste time, because time is money. And if you got position A spending 15, 20 minutes, or even like we do, an hour with people, I can push him or her into spending 6 minutes a person and giving me, you know, 10 people an hour. I can turn over the financial system and make more money off of that. And that's what I'm going to push for, because ultimately I don't care about anything other than that he follows the standard of care protocol, which is give your medications. That's what I care about.
Yeah.
And they're not in the job of, and I'm not bashing the clinician.
Oh, I get that. I get that. Yeah.
The system's not in the job of correcting disease processes or even preventing them or reversing them. They're in the job of managing them.
And well, what's interesting, Mark, is and I'm interrupting you. I'm sorry. Yeah. That same condition, fast forward 5 years later, I found a doctor specialist inside of the traditional. But what was interesting about it, this guy had exited out of the larger hospital system to go into a private practice where they wanted to develop a specialty around this particular diagnosis. And it was very clear to me, and he never sort of overtly verbalized it, but it was very clear to me, I'm going to spend as much time as I want to here, because I want to understand, and I want to go down a path with you that's going to give you, and this is where I was going with that empathy and trust thing, because all of a sudden, Mark, it was like, he hears me.
He got healed about that time. That was your healing.
Oh my gosh. You know, I mean, it was so surreal at the beginning, because I'm going, wait a minute. This is not what I'm used to. And I get, and to your point, I have empathy for doctors who are inside of this system and basically are employees who are basically mandated to do it. But here's what I'm thinking. Could we not? I mean, how long does it take to establish some empathy? How long does it take to make it clear that I hear you? I hear your concern. And again, I'm not Dr. Eric Pennington. I'm the patient, right? Is it that hard, though?
I think it depends on the – you can't hide compassion. Right. You can try to fake it, but you can't hide it, because you feel it. It's something that you sense and you feel. If somebody looks you in the eye and says, you know what, Eric, I care about you, or I love you, or I am here for you. I'm not going anywhere. We're in this together. Those phrases really stick and they mean something. And my job, my wife's job, and it's our position and purpose and calling is to ensure that every person, including right now, I mean, I'm on a podcast with Eric Pennington. I need to be able to think about communication to you and even the audience members that may be watching.
Yeah.
That I genuinely care, because people sense and know sincerity. So I think it's something that you're called to do. But I think it probably can get trained out of you too, I suppose. You know, you just get beat down enough. You just are taught not to care.
Yeah.
Because you can't care. I can't care about you. I don't have time to care, you know. And
I
think you have to get out of the system and get into your own system, a private system, as you mentioned, or maybe like my wife and I are completely independent of the systems. But here's the thing with this. And if there's clinicians out here listening, you know, I mean, I think this is important, is you can do this, and you have to believe that money and provision will follow truth and compassion. And I think that's a great business principle there. And when you do your business in truth and compassion and care for people, well, they're going to notice a difference. They're going to refer their whole family to you. And so I think those are kind of key things. But to answer your question, how do you know if someone's caring? I think you just got to know it.
Yeah, you know? I'd agree with that. Because, I mean, I could just say from my own experience, I could tell the difference between the treatment and the interactions I had in 2020 versus in 2025 with this other specialist.
Yes.
What's interesting to me, when we were meeting to talk about the podcast a few weeks ago, you mentioned about, and I don't know if these were the exact words you used, but it was creating an alternative system. And yeah, that really stuck with me because there's two things that go through my mind. There's maybe an audience member out there that says, hey, look, I know about private doctors who are have their own system and blah, 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 Eric, I can't afford, I need them to be covered by insurance and so forth and so on. And today I'm not going to get into, well, the why does it work that way versus another. But can you talk a bit about what you and your wife are trying or are creating as an alternative system of healthcare?
Well, it's not just an alternative system of healthcare. It's an alternative way of thinking.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I look
great.
At it like this, you know, when you look at, we carry insurance. Okay. Mm-hmm. I carry insurance because for catastrophic occurrences, and we have a business, we have employees, and we have to carry insurance for them. Right. So, yep. And we contribute to that. So I don't bash that concept.
Yep.
But what about this? What about the mindset that says, I'm going to pay my premiums as a security so I can have the comfort to know that if something happens, at least I've got a fallback.
Right.
Versus I want to pay my premiums and I want to make sure to use my deductible because I was told my deductible, once you covered that deductible, they're going to pay for more. But what about this? What about trying to keep your deductible in your pocket as much as possible to let that money grow for you, and then use some of that money that's in your pocket for primary health, like I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So investing your health so that you can invest in your future. And then maybe you don't have to carve into those deductibles every year after all.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about a money saving process. And then most health care companies have HSA or FSA.
Mm-hmm.
Account, mm-hmm. Yep. Flexibly. Use those because this system would cover those because it's still giving you the buzzwords of what you need for your health. And so we want people to begin to understand that the mass utilization of health insurance, just for every little thing that you do, is we've been taught to utilize a system. And some would say it's abuse of a system, but I think it's abuse of the human. Because they taught us to use a system. I got a little cough, so I'm going to go to the doctor. I got a little temperature. I'm going to go to the minor ER because it's 8 o'clock and the doctor's closed. And we've been taught to gravitate towards medicine, and it's got us away from common sense. I'm not about negative on medicine. I'm just thinking there's got to be a different way to address this because we're so darned unhealthy as a society, and that system by its own statistical analyses is not successful.
Well, it's interesting too the way you're putting it, Mark, because I think about, you know, I'm going back to originally we were talking about lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And as much as it would be easy to lay all of the problems at the foot of the healthcare system, a la insurance companies, hospital systems, we all have to take some responsibility in this too. And that goes with, okay, am I, and in our world, we kind of call them the four pillars. There's your spiritual health, there's your physical health, your mental health, emotional health. And the way we view it is you have to care for those with intentionality and with great energy, right? So what that means when I think about my physical health, that's, okay, am I exercising? Am I doing the things that my body needs on a daily basis to keep things moving as best they can? Am I in my nutrition? Am I intentional about what I'm choosing to put into my body, right? And those things, along with the other pillars, right, are what adds to increasing the chances that when I do have that little cough, I don't need to call Mark and say, Mark, I need to get in because I got a little cough. I'm going to be more prone to probably go at it, well, hold on. Maybe I have an aura ring like I have on my finger here, right? And yes, I'm in your tribe. So maybe I'm going to pay attention to what is the aura ring picking up? Maybe the aura ring is saying you got a slight thing going here. Maybe I can. And this all goes back to that decision making and the choices, because my gut is potentially out in the audience, someone heard you talk about this alternative way, and there might be, whoa, that's going to cost. And what we always will advocate, right, Mark, is, okay, let's slow down. You're feeling apprehensive. Let apprehension give its message to you. Give yourself time for your brain, the prefrontal, to kick in, that maybe we should be curious what Mark just said. Maybe I should listen more. Maybe I should reach out to him, because his information is in the show notes to learn more about. And I feel very confident that's what our audience is all about. They know about this process of emotional intelligence and using it to our advantage. So as I say that, right, obviously, there's more than one way to participate in your healthcare. If I look at it through that lens, Mark, and let's say that audience member has gone into the show notes and says, okay, this Dr. Mark Sherwood, I've looked him up. What would be the process? And I don't want to spend time here today to kind of go through the intricacies, but what would be their first step if they wanted to engage with your practice?
Well, we really approach things kind of uniquely. So first thing they do is we have a free webinar the second Tuesday of every month.
Very good. Yeah.
So I don't want people paying us one dime until they can hear us talk about what we do. And in the webinar, in the chat bar, post-seminar, we actually let them ask questions. And so at that point, you know, they can schedule an appointment if they want to. But nonetheless, I hope they're in a better place than they left when they joined the webinar. But ultimately, that's what we've done. And so, you know, when people talk about investing in something, I look at it like this, you know, go back to the deductible kind of concept, you know, if you're deductible, of course, people need to know their premiums are going up and their deductibles are going up every year. And then the broker will come back to you and say, hey, I've got a deal for you. We can make your premiums go down, but your deductible is going to go higher, right? So it's kind of a game, but over the last several years, you're both going to go up, right? And so I look at it like this. If my deductible is $10,000, and I know that I might get some things paid for after $10,000 is paid out of my pocket. What if I decided just one day on a whim that if I invested $5,000 in my health, maybe I would save $5,000 this year, and maybe I would save $8,000 next year.
Yep.
So I've got myself a net profit of $13,000 in my pocket that stayed in my bank account where I could spend on my family, taking them on vacation or whatever. So I think there's just a different way to look at that.
And I, you know, we always advocate this idea of non-dualistic thinking, right?
Yes.
And this idea that, you know what, there might be other things that we can look at outside of what we've always done. And I think you're giving a great example. I mean, right out the gate, come to a free webinar, understand what it is we do and how we do it. And then you can decide whether or not you want to move to the next step, or if, maybe it's not a fit for you. And here's where I want to go, Mark. It's been a little bit back to those four pillars as I described them, you know, the spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical. So when you guys are treating patients, I get a sense, you may correct me, right? I get a sense that in your practice, you do look at not just their physical problem issue. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, your sensor is on point. So let me just kind of clarify this. No, we look at all the following. I look at nutrition, sleep, stress management, movement. I call those the four things that you have some level of control over, and we help you with those.
Right.
And we look at genetics, hormones, peptides, and supplements, the things you wouldn't necessarily know, but we're going to teach you those. Mm-hmm. And then that would be classified as the physical and probably somewhat intellectual, right?
Yeah.
And then we look at emotions and spiritual health around that and through that, because I realized that, you know, we live in this body with emotions and we have a mind, but we are a spirit being, you know, and I realized that you cannot separate those things. Now, in my world, and I don't mind saying this, I am a Christian man. Now, that's what I believe. Now, that doesn't mean somebody else has got to believe that.
Great.
I really understand that the concept of spirituality and emotions have to get into the discussion of health, because it's like you cannot separate those. And again, mm-hmm. how does it work in America? You go down the street to your church for spiritual health. You go to your counselor for emotional health. You go to the school for educational health, and you go to the gym for your physical health. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got those things on every corner, and it's not working. So with every human being, I think it's a mandate in our world. We have to sort of love them, teach them, direct them in all aspects of their experience of being a human.
Yeah. And I think about it, you know, in our world, we have an assessment. It's called, it's an acronym, SEQ. It's spiritual emotional intelligence. And it measures along those lines. But many times people will go, okay, I don't go to church, and I'm not sure if I believe in God, so I'm not spiritual. And we try to tell them, look, this is not about religion.
That's right.
This spiritual thing that we work on has to do with what makes you one of one, that unique individual, that uniqueness, right? And you can use the report and the assessment if you have a relationship with God and you want that to enhance it, to make it better. That's what I've done, right? But it's, again, sort of to what you said, we don't dictate that. And I think if more people would understand that by being open, we may find some pathways that are going to improve the health in those various areas. And to your point, Mark, they all are connected. I don't know of anybody who is physically just a specimen, but yet they're emotionally a wreck. Could it possibly be? I guess it could. But my thing is that as a human being, we're this whole, right? So when we think about that, and we look at our society, that basically my view is that we've kind of misrepresented what this means to be healthy. If you had your magic wand, and this is kind of off of the beaten path, right? And I'm going to use just the, you know, sort of the imagery of a magic wand. What would be one thing you would want people to know out there about these four areas, or about our health in general, that might sort of demystify or lower the barrier, if you will?
I'd want them to, there's kind of two things that I would say to that answer. I'd want them to understand that they have a choice. And to get the choice, they have to have the education around those choices. So if I were to wave my magic wand, it would be that our country would have in their educational systems, from our government, from healthcare systems, talking about, you can't, I don't, this may sound crazy, but I don't want to take away McDonald's from people's choices. I don't eat there. But we live in a freedom place. It's not about taking away choices. It's about enhancing people's choices and encouraging people and educating them around those choices. That's the beauty of our country.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Freedom. And so it doesn't really matter what you believe. It matters that you have the freedom to choose what you believe. And I think if I had my, you know, dream world, that's what it would be. And we would freely educate people, given this idea of informed consent, you know, with what they do in life. You can walk in front of a bus if you want to, but you don't have to. You can go down here to see the clinician to cough if you want to, but you don't have to. So as you mentioned, moving forward from the panic mode, which we're driven kind of that old historical old brain, we need to move more towards the idea of this rational, reasonable, well thought out process of making better decisions. And right now it's kind of challenging because we do have a lot of information, but it's hard to sift through that and find out what is accurate and what's not.
Yeah. And you know, that's interesting, though. I don't have any real true science around it. I don't have any research, but if you said, tell me in your 10 years or so of being sort of focused in on the emotional intelligence side of the equation, what's the common thing that people say is most effective? And Mark, without fail, I would say it's the idea of the pause, the idea 100%. That I will slow down enough to allow that emotion and those peptides and hormones and chemicals to subside so that I can, oh, wait a minute. I don't think he meant that. Maybe I should ask a qualifying question so that I can understand more.
It's very fascinating you say that, and I'll just affirm that for the audience. Yeah. This is a big deal. When I was a police officer prior to my career as a naturopathic doctor, part of my job eventually was in the training aspect, and I would teach the officers I'd call it a professional pause. I'd use that word pause. Mm-hmm. When you're addressing somebody, because if you're addressing things from a reactionary mode, you're probably going to make a bad decision, or you may initiate contact that may be seemingly necessary, but could have been avoided with a pause.
Yeah.
And it's like verbally pausing because you want to react, but you don't. And I still teach that today to my staff, you know, and like, you know, you're going to get paid people that are upset because they don't feel well. Just pause and learn to respond versus react. And when you do, you make better decisions as a general rule, and you guard your tongue, and the tone and the pace is just so much more loving and kind, and you don't escalate the system in other people or yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, because you mentioned this about your staff, your employees, right?
Yep.
You encounter all types of people, right, who are coming in who are not well, potentially, right? What are, like, you know, do you formalize that in your practice that, hey, we're going to remember, we're going to do, and I want to bring up to you something from the Jewish tradition that I think is really connected here, but let me stay there. What are some of the things that you mentioned about the pause with your staff? What are some of the things so that they can be more prepared?
I tell the staff, we train and meet once every 2 weeks for an hour. And I put that on the calendar, and it's during business time, so I'll make them come in after hours. We just kind of close the business and do that.
Right.
And we usually talk about, we have a training time. We train them on new techniques, new products, new theories, protocol, et cetera. We always talk about customer service. I want the Ritz-Carlton approach. And I will push that envelope. And what I mean by that is not that, you know, you got to go stay there. But I want
to
understand that we need to know their name. It's almost like let me just rephrase it where people can understand probably our age bracket. The Cliff Clavin approach. When Cliff walks in, Cliff, you know, it's like in the old Cheers show. We need to know people's name so much so that they feel like this is part of a community that really loves me and cares for me. And I'm important. And I want people to know, and the staff is instilled in this in our training, that your job is to put your feelings beside the point, to pause, and to do your best to make that person, and you don't control the way they feel, but your job is to, with what you control, to give them the opportunity to feel valued.
You know what's interesting, Mark? I when you said that, you know what went right to my mind is when I'm going to visit, I have type 1 diabetes, right? That's my thing. And going to see my endocrinologist. And here's the approach. Eric Pennington. And then date of birth. And it's very cold.
Gosh.
Now, okay, I know the world, our audience is going to say, but Eric, you're one of these emotional intelligence people. You probably are going at it and kind of making light and connecting with them. Okay. But I just thought about what you just said. And I go, no, it is. It starts with, they call out my name first and last. They'll ask me my date of birth. They'll ask me if anything changed with my insurance. But man, how refreshing would it be that they might be able to look at that screen and go, wait a minute, this guy's been in our practice for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So what if it was, Eric, good to see you again. How are you?
Yes.
That would be like, well, wait a minute. You see me? You see Eric, not Eric Pennington, right?
You're not type 1 diabetic. You're Eric.
Yeah.
That's what they should see. And I don't want to see diseases, Eric. I want to see people.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, this is interesting. When people get a diagnosis or something that maybe they have to manage, like a type 1 diabetes with insulin. Okay, great.
Yep.
But it's not it's really important they don't own it. They don't own it. And it doesn't become an ID card.
Yeah. The identity.
Yeah. My name is Eric Pennington, and I'm doing great, man. And by the way, you know, I happen to deal with this. And this, instead of like saying, well, I'm type 1 diabetic, and that's your whole calling card, that's important to not become the first thing people say.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's a real big deal.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, too, right? That these paradigm shifts, right? Because what I just described and what you actually really did with the way that you want your staff to greet patients and things like that, those are not things that violate some state health requirement. No. These are things that you could implement very clearly. And I almost think of it in terms of it's just using it's kind of taking a more non-dualistic approach, right? Like, well, why can't we just note that, wait a minute, this is a person that's been in our practice. I'm going to address them as Eric. It's good to see you this morning. Because you know me, I've been here multiple times. Let's connect that. I just want to throw this out. All right. I saw this clip about the Jewish tradition and how their holidays, their remembrances throughout the year, there's so many. And as I was watching it, I'm going, okay, yeah, I'm familiar with Rosh Hashanah. Yep, I'm familiar with Passover and the menorah. Okay, I'm tracking. But this person that was in this video saying they do this because they don't want the culture to forget. And I get it. In America, we have July 4th, Independence Day. We might have Memorial Day. But sometimes I wonder, Mark, have we lost the remembrance of who a human being is that's walking through your doors, that's coming into your practice? Do you see where I'm going with that?
I do. And I sadly believe that we have as a whole. We've become so sterile, so non-communicative. And I'm not knocking social media and, you know, the device we carry around and all this, but we spend more time text messaging today than we do just saying hello. Eric, how are you? It's just more than a cliche thing. It's just I want to move on. Because if somebody answers the question, how are you, and starts answering it, people are like, oh, my God, I want to leave. I don't wish I hadn't asked that question, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got to get back to that. I think we've lost a lot of that, and our communication is important, and the value of human beings. I think that clearly shows in the angst of our society right now. You know, it's like, look, we live in a world, man, and like even in my world, not everybody agrees with what I think or what I say. And I'm cool with that. I love that. And if we can have a dialogue about it, you know what? I can learn stuff.
Yeah,
I think that's just awesome. And but we need to get back to that. And I appreciate the Jewish culture because you go deep into that. You know, you used to talk about putting the scriptures, you know, on them and on their forehead and that kind of stuff as well.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because they don't want the generation to forget certain things.
You know? Man, I tell you what, Mark, it gives me chills to think about that and this idea that maybe there is a connection with the way that our health, the state of the health of the United States is so bad, because last time that I read and heard, we're spending a whole lot more money than the rest of the world on it, but our results are dismal.
Terrible. We are at the top of the food chain regarding per capita, per expenditure, per year, per family on this thing we call healthcare. But you go to the same comparison of the industrialized nations, we're either one or two from the bottom. And that's not okay. We have some brilliant minds here. We have some brilliant technologies. And our trauma care is probably near the top in the world.
Yeah.
That's what we should be using. We should really get to the point where normal care, I mean, we've talked about what kind of I do and my wife, Dr. Michelle, does is like alternative care. I don't look at it like that. I look at it like we're primary care. This is primarily caring about people and not keep them out of that system.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, and I'm so glad that you course corrected that, because it is not alternative. It is primary. No. Yeah,
and they're over there. They're still practicing. I don't practice, man. I do, you know? So it's like, they're trying medication on you, but this is just a little tidbit people might find fascinating. Did you know there's genetic tests that you can run to see if drugs metabolize and would work for you or not work for you? It would make sense that every human being should do that, but we don't.
But you know what's interesting about that, Mark? And my wife, she's please, I know where you're going. You're going to talk about personalized medicine. And
there you go, man.
Right? Because I would say to her, it's like, but we have the technology. We have the ability to know. Because, okay, just to use this as one example, and I'm not, for our audience, I'm not saying that there would be this revolutionary change if we personalized this particular area. But right. Our audience knows type 1 diabetes. I take insulin, right? And there's a certain brand of insulin that I take. You can't tell me that there isn't technology out there that would be able to tell me, hey, Eric, that's great that you've been taking that particular insulin for the last whatever number of years, but based on your DNA and genetic background, this type of insulin would be much more effective for you. It may not be that way for Mark and Michelle and Eileen and Brett, but for you, because of your makeup. And I'm thinking, well, why would we not? Why would we not want to know? And I know I could probably say, Mark, yeah, I know we got to factor in insurance companies, profitability, Wall Street, and all of those things, right? But if we are truly in the business of making our health better, it would seem to me that's the place to go. And it seems to me as well, and you can correct me, I think in your practice, you are going to look at things like the genetic background, right?
We do. Every person. I look at it like, I don't look at genes are bad. Now, like the lean back today on conventional, as we have termed it, conventional / alternative, they will blame things on genes. Well, it's just, you got a bad set of genes, man. It's just the genetics. But that's not true. The truth is they don't want to know about the genes, because the Human Genome Project confirmed back in the early 2000s that only about 4% of all disease processes were tied directly to genes. So they were looking for the wrong answer. Mm-hmm. When you look for the wrong answer from the right information bucket, you're still going to get the wrong answer. So I look at the genes differently. I want to know, like in Eric Pennington, I want to know how you're wired, man. I want to know what the nucleus looks like. Yeah. What does your wiring look like? What are those recipes that make the proteins that are known as genetics? How do they respond in you in regard to environmental cues? And when I know that, here's an analogy I like to give people. Like downstream is like life. A flood is like disease. But upstream from the river, you have a dam. And above the dam, you have a reservoir. Now, in that analogy, down here is Eric. This is your genes, and your genes respond and react and respond to this environment. So it's not the genes that are the problem. It's the environment's the problem. But if you knew how to manifest change up here, you could predictably correct the flow down here. And so when I look at genes, I think it's just, to me, it's the wonder that just blows my mind. And the more I know, the more I know I don't know. And so I'm just trying to learn stuff, man.
That's interesting, Mark, because this gives me an opportunity to pivot a little bit back into the emotion state of patients when they come in with a problem. I think I have a heart for it because I've watched my wife navigate this. So when you think about, and I'm going to just use loose terms because I'm not a physician. When I think about premenopause, menopause, and I'm going to just call it postmenopause, right? There's these things that are happening from a hormone perspective.
Yes.
And though I know just enough to be dangerous based on what I've observed with my wife, I feel like there's so many women out there who are going into that physician's office and are being told things like, it's just in your head. And that's, you just, you know, you might want to think about maybe going to see a psychologist about this. And my wife heard some of that. Now, I'm blessed that I have a wife that is a fighter. She's not going to just let you say that and then go, oh, okay, well, I guess I better. She's the type that will say, would you please give me the study that makes you think that it's just in my head?
Yeah.
Right. But you know what, Mark? I think there are probably a number of women out there who are going, they think I'm crazy. They think these symptoms I'm experiencing are not rooted in actual issues. They're rooted in just in my head. And I want to affirm your practice in the sense that if you are saying, hey, Susan, hey, Deborah, we see you. Tell me more about you. Tell me more about your family. Yeah. I got to believe these women are probably going, for the first time, I have someone that's taking me seriously. So that's all to lead up to the connection to the emotions of the patient and listening, right? So that role. I don't want to get into the clinical side of hormone therapy and things of that nature, but do you see an impact by taking the approach of, let's see Susan, Deborah as a human being first? Is that an effective strategy in this regard?
That's the only strategy that means anything with me, because as you mentioned, ladies do struggle, and I've watched many, Eric, and there's ladies listening right now, I'm certain. I've watched many experience this thing like it's in your head, or even more dreaded, just get over it. Or even go one step further and says, well, that's just part of getting older and just you gotta deal with it. None of them are true. And it breaks my heart, because there are things you can do. And I know we're not getting a clinical aspect, but know that when we get to that place in life, as ladies and even men to a certain respect,
right?
When we don't have good chemistry, we don't have good presence of things in our body that are normally there, our bodies struggle, our mind struggles, and then hence we struggle. Why don't I feel well? Why am I thinking this thing? Why am I wanting to tear everybody's head off? Why am I there?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why am I so depressed? Why am I gaining weight? You know, all this stuff. And there's a lot of answers out there. And I see it, and my wife sees it. We see it every single day. And I go back to this. I wear a bracelet here. I don't know if you can see it, but it
says
Hope Dealer. And so we believe in people hope, you know,
yeah.
And I think it, giving people hope costs nothing. And you think like that, you give people a flicker, a little light of hope, man, that will get them going to the next day. And sometimes that's all people need, because they don't think they get through the day, man, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's so great. That's so great. So kind of as we're getting toward the end, and I would, Mark, I'd like to have you and Michelle back, and maybe we can kind of talk about that process for women, because I, like you, it really breaks my heart to see them struggle and quite frankly, be dismissed through this process. But let's pivot to what's got you excited here in the most recent frame. Are there some breakthroughs, or there's some treatments or protocols that really have you excited in your practice?
Yeah. The more I've gotten into the concept of longevity as I've, you know, got older, I've realized that probably our expectations have been less than where they should be with the idea of increasing health span. The more I've looked at life history, et cetera, and looked at what the human body is capable of, what the organ system lifespan is probably supposed to be, which I personally believe it's created to probably be about 120. You can base that upon the biblical text. You can also base it upon what we know in history. And so does that mean we're supposed to live that long? No, but does it mean we can live better, younger, longer, or better, younger, older? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And I discovered a lot of these protocols and therapies right now that can like specific bioregulating peptides, and even using molecular hydrogen. I'm drinking molecular hydrogen water right now, you know, and these therapies can go right down to the mitochondria, and right into your genetics and actually create on the water, you're talking even hydrogen, whether you inhale it or water, can mitigate excessive free radicals, which is massively important for the aging process. And then the bioregulating peptides can bind to DNA and create epigenetic response, you know, which is crazy cool. You can actually see a more younger environment, which we can test now as far as what we know, with our immune system, our brain, our heart, our blood vessels. And it's fascinating on what I'm seeing right now. And I think we're just on the tip. I mean, really super tip edge. And it's kind of a vision that I have to give people more hope for a longer period of time in life. And I think that from the emotional standpoint, it takes down the angst and anxiety that is, and it replaces it with something else that's more beneficial.
You know, it's I heard this quote, and it's attributed to Satchel Paige, I believe. And it goes, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you are?
Love that.
I reference that back so often because I'm of an age where my friends, my community, they're talking about slowing down, stopping. I'm not young anymore. And it's almost like they're ready to just cede life over to someone or some group of people who are much younger. And I will continually bang the drum. I had this conversation with a friend. Well, why can't you get on stage with your son and sing that song?
Why not?
Who says you can't? And someone, you know, we were getting into this. Well, I, you know, my voice isn't what it was. I get that. Well, could you sing it in a different key? Could you go an octave lower?
Yeah.
Right? And I think this longevity thing, to your point, if we could maybe shift the mindset that exactly, you know, and I joke with friends, I said, I'm taking the Caleb approach. Some of the best work he did was when he was north of 80. And if he could do that.
He wanted to climb a mountain and go fight people. Right.
Oh, you know, my gosh.
And you know, you're right, Eric, on that thing. And is that if we think different, we are. And you're really kind of a product of your thoughts, a product of your words. And we need to really pay attention to that.
Well, and Mark, I know you know this, right? If you think you have lost it, if you think you can't, if you think it's over, well, guess what? Probably is.
You're right.
Exactly. Even better. Oh, right. Mark, I am so, so pleased and thankful that you joined us today. And for our audience, we'll have all of Mark and Michelle's information in the show notes for if you want to get a hold of them, learn more about that free webinar, as well as we're going to have you back on if you will be so desirous of it. Oh, yes, my gosh. Because there's more to come. There's more to come. All right. So, audience, once again, thank you for being here and tuning in, and we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care. Hi, everyone. This is Eric Pennington with The Spirit of EQ. I'm not introducing a new episode today. I'm here to tell you some things that might help you. Jeff, you're with me as always. So
yes.
How do people get in touch with us?
Well, the best way is just send us an email at info@spiritofeq.com.
That's awesome. Jeff, I was also thinking about reviews, and I'm notoriously bad at asking for them. So reviews on all of the platforms, wherever you get your podcasts,
yes.
You think that'd be good?
I think that would be great because one, that will help us learn how to make better ones. And it's always good for us.
So we're not the perfect podcast hosts.
We're close.
Okay. All right. But
not,
still,
not totally.
We want
perfect.
Your feedback. We want your feedback.
But it also might let us know a new subject. Hey, we need to dig deeper into that.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think.
Cool. We really appreciate that. As always, too, there is social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and we also have a YouTube channel. Those also have mechanisms or options for you to be able to leave a comment, a like, or those kind of things. Just want to make sure that you know how to get in touch with us. Right, Jeff?
Right. We appreciate you all.
Thank you. Once again, we really appreciate you tuning in today. One of the things that Jeff and I want to bring to your attention as well is that when we created this podcast, it was not intended to take the place of a clinician. In other words, if you find yourself in a place where there's something deeper going on or something that you cannot solve on your own, we do recommend that you reach out to a clinician of some sort. This podcast is purely opinion-based, and it is rooted in the desire to help you along your path in whatever way we can. However, it is never going to replace, nor should it ever be looked at as a replacement for clinical help in any way. Thanks again for tuning in.